We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Welcome to episode 331 of the Barcelona Podcast, brought to you by the Blue Wire Podcast Network. I'm Dan Hilton, and yes, this is a podcast, not an old Barca Twitch stream. And no, Anton is not here this week. That's a deep cut for you. But it is Omar Awash of Blaugranagram, and of course, one of my former co-hosts on the Barcelona Twitch stream. How's it going today, Omar?
All good. It's going well. It feels kind of weird to be reunited like this, but hopefully it won't be the last time. So yeah, pleasure to be on here as always.
Well, for those who have listened to the podcast for a long time, watched my YouTube videos, they know full well that I'm much better at reacting to a match after the fact, that I like to take it all in almost in silence. So it was always a challenge to take it all in with the Twitch and live time. But I'm enjoying, again, I enjoy just taking it all in, thinking about it. And yeah, I wanted to ask you to come on. I didn't know if we need to manufacture our own positivity like we used to on the Twitch channel, or we'd actually get to praise the team for a great performance. But after the 4-2 win over Napoli, I think it's very much the latter, of course. I think these positive things that you and I are manufacturing are not coming out of thin air. These are real things. And I think I'll give you an easy softball to start to get you comfortable again on the pod here. Do you think that this was the best performance of the season now after Napoli? Or, I mean, there was Valencia, Real Sociedad, so there are other candidates, but it feels like the internet saying this is the best performance.
Yeah, and I would agree with that consensus, because I think for Barcelona, you know, the reason why I would put this above the Valencia and the Real Sociedad games is because the pressure here was different. Obviously, in La Liga, we always talk about how there is pressure. You want Barca to be, and this season, top four would be a realistic expectation to have from the fans' perspective. But in this, for in this game specifically, it was a 1-1 draw at home at the Camp Nou, which in itself, for some, especially with the Dembélé jeers whenever he got the ball at first, it was a very, you know, delicate situation. And so you come into this game, Napoli are at home. It's what people have dubbed, I've heard some call it the Diego Maradona derby. And so you come into a game where there are a lot of expectations because Barcelona didn't make it through in the Champions League. And then people said, oh, well, they're going to make it through the Europa League. So with a 1-1 draw and no away goals counting, that was in Barcelona's favor. But then could they make it happen here? And the answer emphatically is yes, they could. So I think there was a lot more pressure here. And I think Napoli, they have been a bit hot and cold, but they have done well domestically compared to Barca, who just recently have picked up form, especially under Xavi. And so I think the pressure on this one makes this, for me, or not even an argument, it's the best game of the season for Barca so far.
Yeah, I think there is a standard where I keep flip-flopping, where Napoli had a disaster of a night. We'll get into the tactics of why, but they maybe one of their worst games of the season, clearly. I mean, they had conceded the least amount of goals in Serie A this year, and they leaked four into Barcelona, four very different, and again, we'll talk about, break those down, but four very different goals. So Napoli found a way to leak the ball into the back of the net a number of different times, and yeah, conceding in a way that they normally don't, with a very stout defense. Usually they're, we saw again last week in the 1-1 that they're tactically a very sound team, but Barcelona completely dominated them. So as much as I want to say, well, you know, Napoli had a really bad match, I mean, Napoli were in a good way, with exception of actually just prior to their match earlier in the week, they did have trouble playing out of the back. And Xavi, not to say he did his scout then, because he played them last week, but he capitalized on the mistakes that they made on Monday. And he was the one. I mean, this is no disrespect to Koeman or even Valverde, but we do speak about Xavi and his ability as a manager to we'll say, outmanage or out-tactic the guy on the other side. And because he did this to Belletti in this instant, I think we start with a compliment to Xavi instead of trying to detract from what Napoli did. And I think, Omar, yeah, I mean, I think it's a little early, but between the four January signings that were made by Alemani, so credit to him, and the way that Xavi's project looks right now, for the first time, Omar, since you and I even met, it does feel like there is some momentum. I'm not kidding. There is momentum. There is consistency. There is something. There's this belief in FC Barcelona, not us. Who cares about the Kool-Aids? The players on the team and the manager, right? Like, there is something in that club that believes in itself again that hasn't been there in a long time. I say that, a long time. And I think you're right that it is the best performance of the year because it coalesced in a big European night. It's Europa League, so you can roll your eyes. You're still waiting on that big away Champions League win, of course. But to win a big away fixture in Europe where there was a bit of pressure to show up, then it means that Xavi's creating momentum, creating belief, and somehow that's even more important than the tactics. But, you know, I really want to talk about the tactics. But, yeah, I think that might even be more, more important than the tactics.
Yeah, no, and it's a thing that I've noticed as well, and I was rewatching. I actually sat there, rewatched the last four games today because I wanted to kind of see the transition again. I wanted to see what happened from game to game. And it became very clear to me that Xavi's – and this is the thing. I don't want people to think that I'm saying Xavi is the same as Mauricio Pochettino because Pochettino has had his downs in Paris. What I'm saying is Pochettino, when he took over Spurs, instilled this sense of unity, this sense of belonging to every single player in the team. They had this little handshake thing going, which might seem like a very corny thing to do, but for a team, that having that sort of spirit means a lot, because then if they get along off the pitch, they're going to get along on the pitch, and it makes everything a bit easier. For Barcelona, you can very clearly see that that has happened. The players seem to care more, you know, not to say they didn't care, but there seems to be a sense of unity. Even with the celebration that Piqué did with Araujo for the third goal, that, I know it's a small thing. I know I'm really clutching at straws here, but it matters. That kind of stuff matters. Seeing that there is that sense of unity, you know, you always hear people talk about, oh, well, this defender isn't happy. This player is on his way out. But then you see stuff like that, and it really makes you think. You know, I saw Adama, and I was watching the game, and I couldn't stop laughing last night because it really surprised me. And I'm still taken aback by how well I think he's done, given the very low bar that people had set for him. I think it was in the 85th-ish minute where he sprints all the way back to defense, gives the ball to Ter Stegen, and then runs all the way back up to the other side of the pitch to help with the attack. In the 85th minute, to have that, I know he's a tank, he's an absolute unit, but the fact that he has that drive and has that energy and dedication, not just to Barcelona, but to his teammates, being willing to help out defensively, even though that may not be his strength, I think that, for me, shows that there is the sense of unity that Xavi has instilled into the team, and you really can't put a price tag on that. For me, I think if you think about it, like you said, tactics of course matter. Tactics win you games. But if you have tactics with a team that's not performing as a unit, it doesn't matter. That'll fall out eventually. So for me, I think Xavi has done an excellent job of managing the team as a coach and also as a manager. And I think that's what it really comes down to.
Yeah, to that point about body language, I think Dembele and his reactions to the team since, we'll say, all this went down is pretty evidence of that he is more in that team with those teammates and with that manager than he is at the club or as a player in front of the fan base, which is, again, something to note that Xavi has created this sense of unity. I think that's true through Dembele. Speaking of tactics, I do want to talk about tactics, and let's actually move backwards. I think we can break down the goals as we go along and jump around in the game instead of just making it chronological order, because as much as I'd love to start with Adama and Aubameyang, like, I want to start there. I would love to start with Piqué and Alba and the old guard and Busquets, proving everybody wrong, sure. But I think we have to talk about De Jong, because yesterday was emblematic of when Piqué and Alba and Busquets play well, yes, you get a certain level. Pedri is always going to, I mean, now I'm expecting him every game to give me a certain level. Right, he's so great. I know we do that every week. I have nothing new to add. Pedri is still great. He was great when I had the podcast earlier in the week. He's still great. Nothing has changed on Pedri. I'm not rolling my eyes at that. But and then we'll talk about even Dest and some of the things there and Ferran Torres, whatever. But I think De Jong shows you when he has a great game, and everybody else around him is also playing well and doing their jobs, De Jong certainly has the ability to be one of those players that takes Barcelona from a good team to a great team. Like, he is one of those important players that, and that's why people say to sell him, or people were considering selling him, because he's so, it's so necessary that he is influential, that when he isn't influential, you question his very presence in the team at all. And yesterday, all of those were thrown out the window, all those ideas, because he made complete sense. And it wasn't just on the second goal, right? The second goal came as a byproduct of what he was doing when Napoli had the ball, his press, the way he was picking up space, the way he was looking for space. And looking at his heat map yesterday, it wasn't some cookie cutter, you know, try to pick the ball up on the left side because Barcelona are strong siding, as they've been doing the last few matches. I think that was the way that Xavi got them comfortable. Like, maybe put as many bodies as you can on the left, try to switch the ball over to Adama and Dest in that case, or Alves when he was inverting in the middle. Try to switch it over to the right side. But make sure that De Jong De Jong is picking the ball up near the touchline. Alba is overlapping, and De Jong is going to be dribbling into that space. You hope he doesn't lose the ball. If he does, you're setting up Busquets in a rest defense where he's prepared to do that. Same thing with Pedri. Pedri's prepared to track back and help out in case he does lose the ball. But because Barca were playing so high and so direct and putting so much pressure on that back line, Napoli were leaving huge swaths of space in between their midfield and their defense, and De Jong was consistently picking up the ball and dribbling into that space. And so on that second goal, it's a long ball from Ter Stegen, which, very much like a lot of his balls yesterday, was not totally on target, goes off the head of one of the Napoli midfielders, and then right into the path of Ferran Torres, who showed some good skill to get the ball back to the feet of De Jong. And then De Jong did what he does best. It's dribble into space. He was gaining confidence with every yard. And yeah, it's uncharacteristic that he's going to plant a golazo in the top right corner from 25, 30 yards out. Yes, of course, that's not going to happen every match. But you could tell that not only was he playing with confidence, but he was playing with confidence because he trusted in the system that Xavi has put forward for him to succeed in. It's not just about Pedri and Gabi and Busquets and La Masia graduates and De Jong not being able to curtail to that. De Jong looked really good yesterday in a way that I think is replicable as long as his teammates continue their level at that way and Barca can continue to stay as organized as they are. And if that means that the opponent gets better, it's interesting. It's going to be interesting to me to see, you know, now the next big test, right? The next Sevilla, the next Real Madrid, hopefully the next Champions League next year, you know, those teams.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft, but Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink, which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
And I think you make a great point with Frankie, because that's the thing that I've been, you know, even when people were really adamant on, oh, Barcelona should sell him, I was always one of those defending him, saying, well, he's only as good as his teammates are. And if his teammates aren't performing, given the role he has, if his role is pick up the ball, drive forward, he needs to have the players around him playing well so he can actually deliver a good pass or take a shot or whatever it may be. And because Barcelona, up until this point, right, and by this point, I don't mean Napoli, I mean 4 or 5 games ago, the system was still being built. Xavi was still testing out different players, seeing who fits where, you know, especially now with the arrivals of, you know, Aubameyang, Ferran Torres, which we will talk about, like you said, it gives him, you know, options that he didn't have before. He's managed to somehow rejuvenate Luke de Jong, which for many people, he was a lost cause, and he's come out and he's now a very clinical striker and actually playing really well in the hold-up play. So I think for me, it's more than just about Frankie, because I think Frankie has always had the quality. I think for a while, it seemed like he kind of lost that confidence. He lost that instinct to get the ball and see that little bit of space and drive into it. Because that's sort of, for me, what characterized him as a player, is that that's the thing that he was very, very good at that you don't see very often in midfielders. Because midfielders nowadays, you know, they're usually a certain type of build, tactically speaking. So you have the player that's very good at pressing, then that's pretty much all he's good at, but he's very good at it. And then you pair him with a player that's very good at passing, and that's a good pivot, or that's a good, you know, that's a good midfield duo. With Frankie, he's capable of doing so much, but I think for a while it seemed like he was limited, whether that was tactically from what the coaching staff had told him to do, whether that's from his teammates' runs, whether that was his confidence, which I think shot down. He did struggle. I don't think anyone, you know, denies that he did struggle, but I think for me, yesterday was the best performance I've seen from him this season, without a doubt. Now, I mean, even if you take away the goal, he was everywhere. He was everywhere. He was vocal. You could tell by his body language he was very positive. He kept options open for all his teammates. He was very comfortable on the ball, very comfortable off it, pressing, closing down spaces with his teammates, which, again, the understanding, the sense of unity. If you see a pass that goes, you know, that goes astray, if there is a sense of unity, you're going to chase that down, even though you might not get to it, but at least you made the effort. That's the thing that Barcelona, I think, were missing two Champions League seasons ago, that you didn't have that sense of unity. So it was just, oh, okay, didn't work out. It is what it is. Whereas now there is that sense of unity, and it really does, you know, it really does wear off on the players. It does rub off on the players. And I think for Frankie, that game for me last night showed exactly what he's capable of doing. And the scary part is that's not even his ceiling. He hasn't hit the ceiling yet at all. And I mean, if he can do that game in, game out, I remember actually when we used to do the Twitch streams, we used to get the question, if Frankie is performing like he is, which at the time wasn't very good, and you have Gavi doing what Frankie should be doing, do we need Frankie? And to that, I just want to say now that I can say it without people coming at me. You can see last night why Frankie fits in the team and why Gavi fits in the team. They are two different profiles, make no mistake. And that's not to say that it's one or the other. It can be both. But that also depends on Xavi's tactics. And in different games, you deploy different systems. And I think Xavi yesterday got it absolutely spot on. And I think that's why Frankie worked. I mean, for me, I saw him even somewhat play as a pivot. You say that, but it was a highlight for Barcelona. So he wasn't really playing like a Busquets would. But he still was very good. He was very good. He was very alert. He was very aware of his surroundings. Those small flicks that he did every now and again. His confidence was through the roof. And again, like you said, I think that's also because his teammates are playing very well.
Yeah,
but the idea for Xavi would be to push everyone up.
Yeah, I want to add detail to why he's better tactically and why he was better yesterday to me, and why he's actually been better over the last few matches. Is we criticized for a while. I mean, I certainly have spoken about the space between he and Busquets. When Barcelona was struggling under Koeman, the space between the two was always too far. And there was also an argument that always goes against De Jong that he's not passing the ball quick enough. He's taking too many touches. The ball's on his feet. And that does support the idea that people, obviously, especially on the internet, are not going to be patient enough to see something come to fruition. And so for Frankie to be able to one-touch passes, and which, again, maybe not come natural to him in the way that it does Busquets and Pedri and Gabi, but for him to know where his teammates are in those spaces in a new system does take time. And I'm hoping that we are seeing the fruits of that labor of being patient, because Xavi made the field wider. And particularly last night, he also made it vertically more narrow, which has been really important to Barcelona. And what happens, what we talked about, that it's one thing to have De Jong and Busquets on top of each other defensively, because then they cannot defend the entire field. But if you're going to press so high as a unit and keep a high line, then that big Busquets was the one who was farther forward usually in that high press, to the point where there were times when Busquets was setting up at the edge of the penalty box, the opposing penalty box. And then De Jong and Pedri, they were tasked with breaking down that space between them, the midfield, and the back line. And Pique and Araujo and Dest, those three in particular, because Alba was always subjected to get forward, those three in particular, their job to cut the counterattack down was to slow Osimhen and Insigne in particular down enough where De Jong and Pedri were able to make up that ground. And they did pretty much every single time. The one and only goal. I mean, I don't really, again, I don't really count the late goal because there were substitutes. Both teams had already kind of finished off. And I think Barca actually pretty fortunate that Politano, who is one of Napoli's best players, was not fit for either of these two matches. I just want to throw that out there. Not an excuse for Napoli, just throwing it out there. But so I do disparage that second goal. By Napoli, I don't want to care much about it. But the first one was a mistake by Ter Stegen, which we did the Ter Stegen thing early in the week. I don't want to do that. He needs to find confidence. He needs to get his head straight, whatever. So that goal happened. But by and large, Piqué, who had I'll let you do Piqué next, but Piqué had a sensational game. I mean, arguably the man of the match. And I mean, he also had the goal, but his job, as I said, with Araujo, would just to not necessarily even have to step out or to take the chance, to make the lunge. Their job was to slow down the opposition as much as possible so that that ground can be made up. But because those lines, from the forward line to the midfield line to the back line, because they were so vertically together and it was so narrow in that space, the space that Frankie had to make up was so much shorter. So every time that Frankie got the ball when Barca had possession, he could be positive with it, and he could go and combine with teammates very quickly. And if there was space that Napoli left between their backline and their midfield, he could dribble into that space. So just like I said with Dest earlier in the week against Valencia, decisions were made for him, and he has the skill set and the talent to lean into the tactics that have been set out and the opportunities that both the opposition is giving him and the way that the team is set up. And that is why I'm so positive about what we saw from Frankie de Jong. And that's what I think is replicable moving forward. Now, Piqué, as I said, there was that wrinkle about what he was being asked to do defensively. But that, to what I'm going to give you, is just a mano a mano. Piqué showed up again against Osimhen. Yeah. And he took Osimhen, one a 70 million euro transfer. If Osimhen was playing for Barca, I said this a few times, if Diego Demme was in Barca's midfield, Culés would have lost their ever-living mind last night, because he did a terrible job man-marking Busquets, who's about as quick as a stone fountain, and yet Demme couldn't seem to track him at all on the field. So Napoli fans had a right to go insane, and he was taken off at halftime, reasonably taken off at halftime. And on the other, and up top for Osimhen, if one of those Barcelona forwards, being Ferran Torres, Aubameyang, or Adama Traore, had gone missing the way that Osimhen did yesterday, yeah, he got the penalty, but I mean, it was a lot of work that he had to put in to do very little yesterday. And then Insigne as well looked like he was already in MLS. He looked like he was already in Toronto yesterday. And that's also credit to the fact that Dest pretty much shut him down defensively. And I want to reiterate the fact that when Dest plays next to Araujo along that back line, that's the best parts of Dest you see. Is when you throw some other wrinkle in there where you have Piqué as the right center back, or you have Eric Garcia as the right center back, and whether it's, I think it's when they put Araujo on the left. But when Araujo is the right center back, you get the best out of Dest. So yeah, I mean, let's transition to the back line. What were your thoughts last night, other than praising Piqué? I think that's where we start, but...
Right. Yeah, praising Piqué. I mean, I couldn't help but feel proud of Piqué last night, because I know a lot of people have been on his back for a while saying that, oh, he's too old, oh, he can't keep up. But like you said, the tactics were set up in a way that the shortcomings of Piqué defensively did not come to light, because his task was not to lunge in and commit, because that's not what he's good at. His strength is to constantly contain until you either get the lunge or someone else gets the lunge, because that's the way he plays. And that's why he's been on, with Barcelona for so many years. I think Piqué, for me, he's really improved. Like, you can tell he's improved. And it's not just to say that he's gotten older and gotten more experienced, but it's more that his general awareness, I think, of his teammates, where they are, the understanding in that back line, the amount of times they got Napoli offside, from what I recall was a decent amount. It was 6, looking at the numbers here. And, Napoli are not usually a team to stray offside that often. They're usually quite good with the ball. So for them to be able to do that time and time and time again and get to the point where I think I counted Osimhen complaining very loudly and vocally around 10 times that game, he was very frustrated, and rightfully so, because Piqué absolutely pocketed him. The thing with Piqué is, and I've said this before with Iñaki Williams, who's one of the fastest La Liga strikers, Piqué, when he uses his physicality and has the right players around him and the right system, put him up against any striker, he's 9 out of 10 times he's going to do the job. He's going to get it done. Osimhen is not a slow striker by any means. He's physically strong as well, and he's good on the ball. So for Piqué to be able to shut him down the way he did last night is amazing. And, Araujo, again, I'm kind of tired of talking about Araujo, because I always praise him to the high heavens. And I really can't find any negatives that I want to highlight, because he's still very young. and he's still got so much room to grow. For me, I mean, again, the back line, it was phenomenal. It was really, really good for what Napoli set up. The fact that Insigne, yes, he signed with Toronto, but he does, you could, it seemed, at least the feeling was, he still wanted to do something with Napoli before he left. And, you know, if this was the performance that he put in, let's say, a Champions League night, you could maybe excuse it if it was against a Bayern Munich, who have been on top of the world for the last 3-4 years. But Barcelona are very much still building themselves as a team. Their system, everything is pretty much a work in progress. You know, a lot of the new players came in as you know, on loan deals. And so when you put that up against what Insigne, you know, should have done last night, Napoli fans will have a right to be disappointed. But I also think, again, credit to Dest. Dest looked very confident to me last night. I also had the same assessment for the Valencia game as well, that I think we're slowly seeing the bits of Dest that people have been longing to see since he signed from Ajax. I think he's slowly being put in a system where, because he has Adama or Dembele in front of him, it gets the best out of him, because he won't have to push up too far. And that means that we won't see his defensive shortcomings as much, while he still grows defensively because he has Dani Alves as his mentor. And the fact that Alves pretty much is a starter for Barcelona, I don't think that's a negative for Dest. I know a lot of people would just say, oh, well, Dest is on his way out, we'll get Mazraoui instead, which a lot of people have said since Dest was even signed, which I think is ridiculous. But you look at it that way, and I think Dest is actually learning a lot from Dani Alves. I think Alves's impact on this team has, again, provided that sense of unity from the players rather than from Xavi into the players. So he's come in and built from within, which I think has been, it's been a boost for Xavi. And I think Dest showed that last night. Alba, what, 2 goals in 2 games? I mean, he's back to, I remember the one game that I remember him scoring in very clearly was the one against AC Milan. He just loves scoring against Italian teams. I don't know what it is.
Well, it's actually, the stat is PK. PK's actually scored 17 in European competition, 6 of them coming against Italian sides. So it's actually PK is the one who likes to put the ball in the back of the net. But yes, Alba as well. But it's funny when you mentioned Dest. Like, I think Dest, people were saying, oh, he's coming in and overlapping fullback like Jordi Alba. That's the limit, except on the right side. Or he's going to need to be Dani Alves. He's going to learn how to, he needs to learn how to invert and be this another, basically another double pivot to push another interior forward. Or he needs to be Abidal and he needs to just defend. But Abidal also got forward. But even Dest ceiling, I wonder if he's not Adriano, except on the right side. I wonder if he's not just a solid defensive right back who isn't known for his defense, but is going to be known for structurally helping out the center backs and shutting down a system using his speed and using his defensive awareness. And then when he can get forward, he's just tasked to kind of shuttle the ball around and keep things moving and make the right choices and make good decisions, which he now has done in 2 straight matches. So I think by settling down the expectations of Dest a little bit, it's actually getting a bit more out of him. Right, like, what do we expect from him? We're getting more out of him, expecting less of him, if that makes any sense.
It does. And I think that's the thing too. I think people were very quick with Dest to jump the gun and say, oh, well, look, he's flopped. Like people just generally do with signings that have a big price tag slapped onto them or have a lot of hype built up around it, right? So for Dest, I think it's one of those things where, like you said, if you lower your expectations, because he still is a very raw product. He was a very raw product when he joined Barcelona. It's not, you know, he doesn't have that many caps for the national team just yet. He's still growing as a player. You know, this is pretty much the equivalent of getting someone up from Barca B and then complaining why they're not good enough. Obviously, you have the La Masia aspect. I'm not going to get into that. But my point is, he's still a very raw product. Like you said, his ceiling might not be that high. And that's okay. Because when if that is the case, I'm sure Barcelona will find a way to get another right back in and then have Dest shuffling in as a back.
I mean, wasn't he maybe only 20 million euros too? Like, we talk about price tags, but
he was pretty cheap, I'm pretty sure. Yeah.
Yeah, young fullbacks go for 30, 40 million euros now. And I thought he was definitely under 25 million euros. Yeah. Right, so I think
you just hear a lot of people just complain about
it. Of course. And I don't want to jump on the fact that Dest has turned this corner, and it's right. Same thing with Frankie De Jong. Like, that might be just to warn people, that might be Frankie De Jong's best performance of the season. Like, he might not replicate that throughout the remainder of the season, I mean, PK arguably might have just had the best performance of his season too. That might be the, just to warn people, that might be the top. But again, the momentum that they're building, that they're capable of these performances, they're capable of putting eight past Valencia and Napoli in two straight matches. So no matter what happens against Galatasaray or some of the other big teams, it's a reaffirmation that top four is very possible because of the the limit. How much can they raise? I'd love to see them raise the ceiling and go after the, you know, we'll say the big dogs and in Real Madrid and Sevilla. As long as they've raised their floor enough to just pick up points for the rest of this La Liga season and not finish even top four, but finish top three and not worry about top four by May, where you can, you know, basically give Ricky Pouget tryout for other teams over the summer, Oscar Magatha for tryouts. I had to get that in. That's no knock on Pouget. Just, you know, we talked about it before. He's six midfielder, and, you know, I get nothing out of his performance. Same thing with Magatha. I got nothing out of, and by that I mean there's nowhere for Random on them. They don't play enough. They don't have match fitness where I'm not, it's not a tryout for them. They played 15, 20 minutes. But I want to move to the front line, because you and I haven't spoken yet about the, obviously, Aubameyang, Adama Traore, and Ferran Torres. They're all getting different reviews from people because of what's happening here. And I think I'm going to let you go first. I think it's good to talk about them together, because I said in the match review yesterday that speed kills, and Aubameyang and Adama Traore are two profiles that Barcelona have not had in a long time. And Xavi is certainly getting the best out of them. So you could talk about them as a unit, but I also want to talk about them individually. So I haven't actually heard what you think yet about Aubameyang and Adama Traore. So take your pick. I want to go over both of them.
To start off, Adama, I think people's expectations of him were in the gutter. I mean, people were very quick to just say, oh, no end product and all that stuff. I think for me, you know, we spoke about this before. I think you also wrote it on Twitter with his expected assists actually dropping since he joined Barcelona.
Yeah, his expected assists, I was really harping on that before Barca, 0.17, that put him in the 51st percentile. And that number has dropped to the 45th percentile, because Barca are creating so many chances, even though he went with zero assists for Wolves this year and turned that into four assists in five games with Barca. His expected assists has still gone down, even though his actual total assist number. So numbers don't mean anything. There you go. That's a lesson.
Exactly.
Numbers are nonsense.
The eye test. He passes the eye test. No, for me, I think his one thing that I was a bit worried. I will admit, I was a bit worried as to how he was going to adapt to La Liga again, because it's been a while. You know, the system that Barcelona were building was still very raw, and now it seems like he's found a place in that system. He's found a role. He's found a spot that, well, you can look at that and you go, okay, well, that's Adama. That's what he is as a player. And I think for me, I've been impressed with the accuracy of his crosses. I mean, maybe the numbers will prove me wrong on that, but I think his crosses have been pretty accurate for the most part. He did get the cross that gave Luke de Jong the equalizer against Espanyol. I think for me, his passing is what's really impressed me the most, because we all knew he could cross. We all knew he was fast. He was a good dribbler, but his passing has impressed me a lot. His ability to be part of that quick passing, the little ronda they do sometimes throughout the games, his ability to do that without fail and not be a liability when it comes to passing it back and not being a player that's too direct or too one-dimensional. I think in that aspect, he's really, really impressed me. And I was talking to someone about it earlier, and I think it's because the better players you're around, the better you become as a player. For Adama, he was used to playing with Wolves, with no disrespect to Wolves, but the players he had around him and the league they played in and the way Wolves played, I don't think that's how you get the best of Adama Traore. I think you get the best of Adama Traore with not a five-man back line, but this type of setup where he can attack a lot. He can combine with players. Players show him short options and long options. He can cross it. He can pass it. And he has the creativity to know what to do. And I think he's still very much developing. For me, last night I think was a very good performance. And I think it was kind of the cherry on top of his start for Barcelona. I think he showed glimpses of what we could see in the first one or two games. Then against Valencia, I think he really picked up. And then now today, last night, I think he showed what he's made of. And I don't think that's the ceiling from him either. I don't think that's the best performance we'll see, because I'm very sure that he's capable of much, much more. For Aubameyang, I'm going to let you get the ball rolling with that one.
Well, for Adama Traore, I would add too that it's a matter of asking what the quote unquote Barca way is, right? Because he really does break our brains that he is a La Masia thing. And because the internet dictates that we speak in little tiny 160 character riddles to each other, there's no full nuanced understanding of what Adama Traore's role is and what is expected mm-hmm. of him, other than that he doesn't do certain things well and he does other things well. And I was thinking for both Adama Traore and Aubameyang yesterday that, so Aubameyang had two or three times where he dropped in deep, had a terrible first touch, gave it over to Napoli. Barca won the back ball. They won the ball back within 10, 15 yards. Usually, actually, Pedri, who was set up almost prepared for a bad first touch.
He was ridiculous last night.
And Adama Traore, still, there were so many times that why his expected goals has gone down, not up, is that he's still missing crosses. His final ball is like, well, really, Adama? Like, you're only doing this one out of every however many times, right? Six or seven chances.
Right.
And even Araujo yesterday, not great playing out of the back either. Had one nasty touch that came the other way. But with all those mistakes that those three players in particular are making, I enjoyed last night so much because it didn't matter. Because Barcelona are creating so many chances, and actually Xavi's system is helping both Aubameyang and Adama Traore, who are two players that I think in our brains, on our Barca brains, we say, well, how does that make sense? How does that fit in what my idea of the quote-unquote Barca way is? But it does, because the quote-unquote Barca way we're doing is that high press or the desire to put the other team under pressure. Now, the difference here is that we expect Barca to both control and to constantly suffocate, which is a very difficult thing to do when you have, again, players in their mid-30s. We've gone over this a million times, that Barcelona were too slow defending on the counter, and they were too slow on the counter themselves for a long time because of aging players. But now you've got some real athletes in there, and speed does kill in the modern game. So Aubameyang and Adama Traore, right, their job, and even Jordi Alba still, their job is, hey, Barca's going to press high. The minute Barca turn them over, go directly at that goal. You go A to B. Do not stop for $200 like a game of Monopoly. Do not, you know, take a break at Wawa or Sheets or wherever. You know, these are American references, right, but, you know, don't stop at the gas station. Just go right to goal. And so, and it's a matter of you create more chances, you create more opportunities. But it is interesting that in the last four matches, Barca has only outshot their opponent twice of those four times. But their shots that they're getting on net are culminating in goals because of the pressure that they're consistently putting the other team on, team under. And the directness of that play as well between Adama Traore and Aubameyang creates chaos in that Barcelona is also scoring their goals in a myriad of different ways. I'd said it right on the earlier show. They scored two goals off of throw-ins. Against Valencia. I cannot remember the last time when Barcelona just created some chaos off a throw-in and put the ball in the back of the net. It was difficult to remember the last time that happened.
Right.
That twice on against Valencia. Now against Napoli, they score one off a broken play off a corner kick. When was the last time? I mean, Barcelona's doing that now, but it was not something we ever expected to be happening. They also scored a banger from a midfielder who doesn't really score goals in open play like that. Almost all De Jong's goals always come within the 6-yard box, not even the 18-yard box. And then the counterattacking goal, I can't remember the last time that Barcelona scored a counterattacking goal like that. I mean, we're talking 2017. We're talking Neymar. That's what we're talking. That was really the last time.
Oh, yeah, the MSN days.
I'm thinking Neymar was really one of the last ones who scored that kind of counter-attacking goal off a short corner from the opposite team, where they thought they would get one over. Barcelona usually concede on short corners like that. They don't take it the whole, 85 yards in 11 seconds the way they did. And so just putting these January transfer windows being different players than what Barcelona fans are used to, or actually addressing the needs that Xavi needed, is doing wonders for the system that he wanted to put into place. And then Ferran Torres capping that off. I know you've got something to say about Aubameyang, but you can handle both he and Ferran Torres, because for as much as I did the Ferran Torres thing last week and I did it again, I think I was certainly happy to see that the naysayers about Torres, I think people were, because of the 4-2 win, I think people were a little more willing to be intellectually understanding of how important Ferran Torres' movement was yesterday and how he actually had a really good game, regardless of, it wasn't even end product. I mean, they had such a hard time taking the ball off him. His ball retention was good, his pressure was good, and his ability to switch with Aubameyang between that left wing and the middle of the field was giving Napoli, Koulibaly in particular, a ton of different issues. I mean, why do you think Frankie Young was so wide open between the midfield and back line? That's because the movement of Ferran Torres and Aubameyang just kept Napoli's back line pinned back, completely honest, while that midfield was worried about trying to get out of all that pressure that Barca were creating on that high press.
Yeah, no, I think you're absolutely right. And I think, you know, I'm just going to talk about both of them. Torres is an excellent player. I mean, he's a very, very, very good player. He's very skilled with the ball. His ball retention specifically really, really impressed me last night. because you don't really see that very often with wingers slash number 10s to be able to hold the ball like that and just frustrate the opponent. Because sometimes he literally just did it to frustrate them. It was not to draw a foul. He didn't need them to get a yellow. He just did it to frustrate them to kind of get the ball going. And for me to be to see a player do that and still get criticized is ridiculous. Because, yeah, he's not going to be your double digits in goals a season type player, because that's not the kind of player he is. But he is the player that will help you build play. He is the player that will make intelligent movement to the point where he'll frustrate one of the arguably best center backs in the world for a while in Koulibaly. At least he's gotten those shouts for years now, at least. So Torres, I think, like you said, I think he had a really, really good game. And I think if I had to say what I think went well, it would just be redundant. So I'm going to move on to Aubameyang. Aubameyang, I think he had a very good game. His finish was excellent, was exquisite. I think the fact that he is able to take those shots from distance, because we've known this for years that he's able to do that. The fact that you have strikers able to do that for Barcelona means that when he drops deep, you have Ferran Torres, who is very intelligent in space, being able to push up, or Pedri, who was everywhere last night, being able to push up, or Adama, or even Ousmane Dembele if he's on the pitch. And so it just gives so many more options for Barcelona going forward. And I think Aubameyang last night fully deserved that goal. He maybe wasn't too much on the ball, but when he was on the ball, he was very effective with it. So it's all praise from here. I really don't know what more to say, because I could
I wish the game had ended. I wish the game had ended with that fourth goal, which was the one that people characterize as a quote unquote Barca goal, which is pass, 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 possession, 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 build up through the middle, Busquets, Araujo, Pedri, De Jong. And it was funny, I was in my office here and my wife had come in taking a break from work, and it sounds silly, but one of the things we do is she likes to see where I point to where the ball is going next. And on that fourth goal, I don't do it all the time. I do it once ever, whenever. It's just a fun thing. So I pointed and I went Busquets, Araujo, Pedri, De Jong, and then I went back to Araujo, and instead the ball went to Adama Traore, who then passed it through De Jong dummy run, and Aubameyang finishes the play. So the one time when I didn't point in the right direction was the time where, Barcelona are moving faster than my finger could move, because it was De Jong who found, right? I think it was De Jong who found Adama.
It was Adama. So the last ball was Adama through the legs of De Jong.
Right, but prior to, whether it was Pedri or De Jong.
I think it was De Jong to Adama.
Right, so then De Jong just continued his run on, right? So De Jong made the decision, made the right choice, and where I expected it to go in a certain way to keep possession, to keep recycling, and instead they broke the play open in one pass. And that proved to me that, not that they needed to prove anything to me, but from pass to pass to pass, that was the one that unlocked everything. And then Adama Traore makes the right decision instantly. And then again, De Jong to finish that run and Aubameyang to finish it. Things are really coming together. And yeah, you call that a Barca goal, because I think under Xavi, the idea of Guardiola had his Barca, and I think it's a better way to characterize this stuff, right? Instead of saying the Barca way, there was Cruyff's Barcelona, and there was Guardiola's Barcelona. There was Enrique's Barcelona, which also corresponds with Enrique Spain, ironically enough. And then you have Valverde's Barcelona, which I think people are still trying to figure that one out. And then Xavi's Barcelona is going to have its own ideas, because it has its own players. It has its own individual players who we're trying to call out and say, this player does this well, this player does that well. But at the end of the day, a Barca goal under Xavi, and the way I'm going to characterize that, is a team that puts the opponent under so much pressure that eventually, and I think Barca goals, quote unquote, can only really happen in the last 20 to 30 minutes of a game, or 40, or at least in the second half, when an opponent has been worn down by Barcelona's superior technical ability, their superior talent, and their superior ability on the ball, not to control the match, but to take the life, to suck the life force out of an opposition with or without the ball. Because the minute they lose it, they're going to get it right back from you. And so that fourth goal is emblematic of the Barca way, because it was a reward for all the hard work they've put up to that point, for taking the life force out of the opposition the way that the Barca Femení does. And that's why Barca Femení goals all feel like Barca goals, because that's what they are. There is a hopelessness in the eye of the opponent. And I mean, that's kind of what, I don't have a killer instinct myself, but I love watching a team that professional athletes who have that killer instinct, and that's the difference. So, all right, before we wrap this up, Omar, real quick, Playing Galatasaray in the next round, I already covered a little bit with the Iñaki Peña loan move. 13th in the Turkish league, not the Galatasaray that we remember under whether they had Arda Turan and that kind of group. But they're struggling this season. Former Barca man, a former assistant of Pep Guardiola and former NYCFC coach, Dominic Torrent, he's in charge. He was appointed a few weeks ago, so he's only been in the job for less than a month. But Galatasaray got through. So we'll have to see how Barca does against that. How would you then, and it's an easy answer because Xavi's rotating everybody, but how are you at this point now starting to prioritize the Europa League round of 16 to La Liga?
I would say for Barcelona, it would be, I think the focus should be to just go all the way into the Europa League, get good points in La Liga, get as many points as you can, obviously, but rotate in La Liga and then keep the main 11 that's working for Europa League. And I know people might disagree with that. People might say, no, it's the other way around. We got to win La Liga, or we got to get a top four, or top three, or top five in La Liga. But at the same time, if you win the Europa League, you are automatically qualified for the Champions League. Yeah. So then the top four or five doesn't matter as much, in my eyes at least. But I know that might be a bit of a hot take.
I don't think it's a hot take. I think it's just a differing opinion. It's not that I disagree with you, but I noticed, I think Xavi agrees with me, but that first leg against Napoli, Busquets didn't start. And to me, that indicated where Xavi sees his priorities. He also, because he has Dani Alves available for the Europa League, for La Liga, not Europa League, if in theory he has it's one player, but in theory he has more depth in that competition, sure. But yeah, I mean, I think in La Liga, it's possible to get third or fourth. That's very possible by putting together good performances.
Right.
And I actually think the way that they're playing now, it's more likely they're going to put together, 60 or 70% good performances, enough to get some points there. And in Europa League, as is always the case in Europe, even if Barca, because Xavi said that he doesn't think they are, and that's totally fair, but even if Barca is, we'll say, the number one in the power rankings of the Europa League right now, they look the best in the last round, anything can happen in Europe. That's why we were so excited that Barca finally had a great Europa League night, because it seems like they were the only one, because anybody can do anything in Europe on any given night, but it always felt like Barca were going to fall short in the big Europa League away match. And so it felt like, how can you in a competition that's just complete nonsense? So I can't disparage Real Madrid's, I have to be able to disparage Real Madrid's Champions Leagues, in some way. And that is the fact that Europe is. Like, yeah, the better team generally wins, but it's also, a lot of nonsense results happen. And that,
no, I agree with that.
We take referendums on these entire projects and entire teams based on one match in Europe, as opposed to, I'm always of the mind that La Liga tells you exactly who you are over the course of an entire season. And I think where Barca were under Koeman is proven to be correct. And the improvements that Barca have made under Xavi, it's not a knock on Koeman. It's that Koeman was the right man for the moment. You and I, game in and game out, we got it. It made sense at the time, but Xavi is certainly the man for the job now. And the points are backing that up. He's got the second most points of any team in the Liga since he took over. And Xavi's project, I started this with Xavi and I ended with Xavi too. I was excited about him. This isn't like me complimenting myself. I'm just saying, I was excited about him. It wasn't just because he was a Barca legend, but there were fears. I mean, there were fears, of course, that he was going to become the next Pirlo, the next Lampard, that he was going to become the next legend turned, he doesn't entirely know what he's doing. And he might be out of his depth. He might be out of his depth next season if Barca makes the Champions League and they draw Bayern Munich again in the group. If that happens, I'm just going to sit in my car for a while. I don't want to talk to anybody. But if that's the case, that'll be the next referendum, right? Is Xavi a good enough manager to take that step?
Right.
But he at least is proving so far that he's a good enough manager to improve results from what Koeman had, with a team that was still broken, but between a good transfer window in January, credit to Alemani and the whole board and everybody scouting, but because he was able to bring in some players to fit his system, and his system is starting to work for guys like Frankie de Jong and Pedri and Gabi and those midfielders who need to be important to the team for next 5 to 10 years, I don't think I can be much more positive about the start that Xavi has had at FC Barcelona.
Yeah, it can be understated, honestly, because he has been he's been very smart with his tactics. He really has been taking care of the team, and it really shows. It shows, like, all the way from the body language to the actual play going on the field, to how the team is moving around, to it shows. It shows in the results. It shows in the stats. Passes the eye test. I think Xavi has exceeded many people's expectations, and I don't want to say that this is, I don't think he's peaked yet. in at least not in his Barcelona tenure. And I think he's definitely, I hope he's going to be the man, you know, for the job for next season. I think he will be for sure if he keeps going on like this. And especially, you know, you have to think about who's leaving in the summer. Some loan deals are going to be over. Who's going to be replaced? Are those loan deals going to turn into transfers? So on and so forth. So still a lot to be done when it comes to that. But for now, I think he definitely is the right man for the job. He's definitely showing it. And this is a very small thing. This is a very minor detail. But he is very animated on the sidelines, and I think that's refreshing for some fans.
Yep. So I mean, he loves the club. He cares. You know, that's important.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
All right, Omar. Where can people find you?
At Omar Hawash BG on every platform, and you can find my company on blogonagram.com or at blogonagram on wherever you like to read your news or check your social media feeds.
All right. So yeah, that is Omar Hawash again, a Blaugrana band fame. Follow him wherever you choose to follow him, and then we're on Twitter and Instagram at the Barcelona Pod, at D13 for me, Patreon, Facebook, YouTube with those match reviews as well. You know where to find us, the five headlines. People seem to like them, so I'll keep doing them. And most importantly, though, thanks for listening to this, the Barcelona Podcast. Until next time, we'll talk to you soon. Of course, the Barcelona.